You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
If your Social Security benefits have been denied, call 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Elk and Elk, proud sponsor of the Cleveland Browns. Go Browns. Before we get into the grades, we're going to go back to the phone lines here on CBD. Mike in Akron, welcome to the show. I'm sorry, let's go to Andrew in Medina. Andrew.
Thanks for taking my call, guys.
You got it, bro.
Two quick points. With the O-line, I go back and watch the games and rewind and all that, and it seems to me like, I don't know if it's the guys around him, but Alex Mack is just getting burnt too many times during the last few weeks on crucial plays. But my second point more is looking for your guys' like answer to this or response to this with what the Houston Texans did today.
With Ryan Mallett?
Yeah, it's a big topic, and we had that stuff happen to us in Cleveland since last year, and I'm not looking to get rid of Manziel or anything like that, but it just seems like all the rest of the teams are a different organization, and they step up and they make that noise of we're not putting up with it but us. And I just wanted to get your guys' take on that.
So here's my take with the Mallett situation. Number one, they didn't draft Ryan Mallett. They brought him in last year. He wasn't working out. They had issues with him on the sideline, and then they had the issue with him here where he missed a team flight because of traffic.
Which is a joke, bro.
Has that ever happened? Have you ever seen a player miss a team flight due to traffic?
Well, we had a player late to a game, and a few of our players last year, didn't they miss our team flight?
Nobody missed a team flight. I know that, at the end of the season, Josh was not allowed to travel with the team to Baltimore. But I don't think anybody missed a team flight. We did have an incident with late to a game last season.
Yes.
With one of the
I want to say we had someone extremely late getting to the facility to, or actually had to meet. The way in which I recall is in San Diego, and it was the same everywhere I was, and I know in some cases I've been in, you know, there's places that like you drive yourself to the airport and get through security and, through a special security and get to the plane. But we've always taken a bus to the airport as a team. And I know there were guys that literally had to, that missed the bus, that went right to the airport, parked the car themselves, and had to get to the plane separate from the remainder of the team. But no one missed a plane. No one missed a flight. But it's inexcusable. And you know what it is? Because, as I just said, what a lot of guys like to do on a Saturday or even on a Friday is you have, once practice is over and you're off the field, you know, a lot of guys, majority of guys bring all their stuff to the building to change into their suit and do their shower, and you get to have lunch there before you get on the bus, and you've got plenty of time. Some guys like to be cute and roll out of bed, come right to the building, and then literally in that hour and 15 minutes, they want to shoot home, which might be 20, 25 minutes, you know, grab their stuff at that point, get dressed, and come back to the facility, and that's when they run into the traffic. That's when there's the accident. They get pulled over, whatever it is that keeps them from getting back to the building on time as they make their way to the airport and essentially not get on the flight.
Yeah, it's rough, and that's one where I think he was becoming clearly a malcontent there, and they got rid of him. I don't think the Johnny situation is similar to that in any way, shape, or form. Listen, if discipline needs to be handed out with Johnny Manziel when the NFL gets involved, it's going to happen. I don't think that the situations are too similar yet. I don't think Ryan Mallett is coming to Cleveland, for those people who are wondering about that. It seems like Dallas might be a landing spot for him, if anybody takes a shot on him in the NFL. I mean, how would that be regarded on a new team if Ryan Mallett came in knowing the way that he was ousted there in Houston?
Slightly laughable, you know, and for Ryan Mallett after what happened by not being the starter, then Hoyer getting benched, and then him coming in, playing all right, hot and cold, and then basically losing out because of the injury, and then Hoyer playing the way he did to get back into the football game through what, you know, played well in the next game. I think it's still lost. It's guys might, you know, guys are going to accept you if you feel that you can win. And that's the same thing I've always said about a rookie.
You've seen that with Greg Hardy.
If you're a rookie, or if you're a player, like, it's, you might not be friends with the guy, but you're always going to accept him as a teammate in the working hours that you're at that building, and you appreciate him for his ability to help you win a football game, but otherwise, you're not forced to be friends with him.
If Greg Hardy wasn't a difference maker, there's no way they're even keeping him around in Dallas. That experiment would already be well over. 216-578-0850. Let's go to our guy George in Baltimore. George, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nathan and Matt, how are you guys?
Good, man. How you doing?
Listen, you know what? Long-time listener, incessant tweeter, first-time caller. I just got to get this off my chest.
Are you G.I. George?
I am.
Yeah, George, what's up, bro?
Welcome, bro.
What's going on, guys? I love the show. Neil Patrick Harris has got it wrong. Actually, CBD is the best time ever. I just got to get this off my chest. I think Mike Pettine is a great talent evaluator. The consensus during the offseason, I've heard you guys say it. I heard Hayden and Thomas speak to it, Grubler and Shonka, that there was a dramatic increase in the talent on the Browns roster. And I think that he's a great talent evaluator. And I begin to ask myself, did we hire a coach or a scout? Listen, I'm looking. He has been unable to develop the rookies. He shows no interest in integrating the free agents. And an inability to correct deficiencies. And I got to tell you, the optimism seeped out of me faster than the Patriots game ball on Sunday, guys. I'm hoping that we'll get a chance to see Johnny Manziel and that we can at least get a look at some of the young players on the roster. For me, the best part of the season right now is really the rehash during the week with you guys. I think that we basically missed out on an opportunity when we let a couple of games get away early in the season. That's all I have. God bless, guys.
George, thank you, man. Appreciate it, bro. Thanks for all the tweets. Thanks for listening, and thank you for the call very much right there. You know, when you look back at your career, because there is something it seems like the young guys, you know, aren't developing at the rate you would want them to. You know, Justin Gilbert, for all that talent, is not at a place where the coaches trust him to play cornerback yet. How much of this is on the player? How much of that development is on the head coach? Or is it much more on your position coaches? And really, what's the story here? You've gone through it. You've seen your skills probably accelerate with certain people who were able to get the best out of you and maybe others weren't able to. What goes into truly into a player's development in the NFL?
I developed most as a player in the National Football League as a linebacker when I was playing special teams and playing well, and then through practice deserved an opportunity to be built into a package or two that actually you carried into a game. And when I talk about the snaps that I started to get, I'm talking 6 to 10 snaps a football game in this particular package. And I would grade out 6 for 6, you know, 9 of 10, you know, with a coach, not with without an ME, meaning a missed assignment, or an MA, missed assignment, or mental error was the ME. But it was, you know, small little ticky-tacky things that coaches can sometimes get, and they always get like that when you're winning, that eventually grew into more packages, more responsibility. But my whole point in being is I worked extremely hard to, as I always talk about, to mentally be a pro throughout the offseason, learning from some of the veterans in the locker room. Then I began to take the game more serious. And once I got the taste of being in that defensive game plan and playing those 6 to 10 plays, I wanted it to be 12 to 20. I wanted it to be, you know, I didn't want to come off the field, even though, you know, every you know, there's only a few guys that play the entire time. But eventually, I built the trust in the coaches in me simply by being a pro and doing my job in practice first. And then when I get that little exposure, and I think that's kind of what G.I. George is talking about. Our guys like Ibrahim Campbell, you know, our guy, we see Xavier Cooper and guys like Justin Gilbert. They got the chance early and didn't do it, but we have no clue how they'd react in a game situation now. So then how do you truly evaluate them?
Which is a great question. So you think it has mostly to do with the way that you approach the game as an individual. How important are your position coaches in refining your technique and aiding in your development?
Vital. Vital.
So huge.
So much more so than the head coach or the coordinator,
so
for sure.
Could you tell a big difference at times in your career between what you would call a very good inside linebackers coach versus an average or versus
yes.
a bad, and you saw how that affected not only you but players around you
yes.
and their ability.
Yes, and everything that had to do with those two coaches is their attention to detail. If your coach carries attention to detail and that's the way he teaches you, you have no other way of learning other than to be attentive to every single detail associated with playing linebacker, your job in a certain call, in a certain defense, and you study the game the way your coach taught you to study. If you have a coach that, you know, doesn't watch a lot of film, you know, and kind of sends you on your way with your tablet or with the DVDs back in our day is what we had to watch them on. And you go, watch it tonight. But that Monday Night Football game's on. You know, my buddies are all on Xbox Live at 9 o'clock at night, and I'm a Call of Duty guy. I don't play, so it's like hard for me to rattle them off. Or the Madden, or Madden just came out. If you're the guy that's excited about Madden coming out, you're weighing Madden or watching film every night, at least as a single guy. You know, when you have a family and kids, obviously, you know, your time is spent
with
that.
Isn't it fun to watch film, though? Like, maybe it's just because it's not a job to me, per se. I love it. I'm fascinated by it. And I love, my favorite thing is when we come in here and you draw stuff up on the whiteboard, you draw stuff up here, because I love learning about the game. And to me, as a player, when that's really, I have an opportunity to create wealth for myself and generations below me and generations below them and generations below them doing something that I love. I don't know. I don't know if you could get me away from the tape. I think I would be obsessed with it.
But it's in some cases, like this week, for example, the Cleveland Browns are watching four games, you know, a four game breakdown of the Arizona Cardinals, not all seven that they've played so far. They're watching a four-game breakdown,
yep.
And you'd be surprised that if you're actually a film watcher in preparation and a starter, you will buzz through. You'll watch every single offensive clip, if I'm a defensive player, of the Arizona Cardinals through those four games 3 to 5 times by the time you play on Sunday.
And you'll have notes.
You'll have notes. You'll have the breakdowns. Your coaches, as I said, along with, like, Greg Minuski, who's now the defense coordinator of the Colts, was my linebacker coach. And every single day, as I mentioned, first and second down was the emphasis on a Wednesday. He would have watched the film since we broke our film down from that last week and gave us, you know, and we reviewed it as a team. He immediately moves on to the next team. And he has his notes that the tendencies he picked up and his attention to detail, because he was a former player. You know, a guy who played 12 years in the National Football League, started 20 games in his career, but he's a special teams and a backup guy. But he learned from Derek Thomas in Kansas City, who played the game at an extremely high level, and how he prepared. And so he would give us these notes, all in reference to first and second down. So we had, it was almost like a cheat sheet for what we were going to look for when we watched film, or tendencies that we were supposed to pick up so much sooner. And so if you have a coach that gives you, that has a mentality that you're a professional, and that you should be able to do this for yourself, there's a big gap, I feel, because a lot of players don't know how to watch film. You know, especially at the college level, I always say this, and I'm kind of rambling, but if I knew what I knew in college in high school, I'd have been a high school All-American. If I knew what I knew in the pros in college, I would have been a multiple All-American. And I would, because you see the game so differently, and if you don't have a coach or a position coach that emphasizes those things and spends the time, and I'm not saying that the Browns coaches don't, I'm just talking in generalization.
Sure.
If you don't, you will miss those things. And it will take you ending up in the room on another team, or this a regime gets fired and a new coach comes in. And I was mind blown when Wade Phillips took over as a defense coordinator in San Diego, because I literally sat there in a meeting room and I went, like, and I clicked my fingers and I just go, I get this entire package right now, and I've been lost for so long.
So the coaching can make a massive 100% difference on your
development. 100%.
When you go through and you do, as you said, let's say you watch the four games a snippet 3 to 5 times, you have your notes, you're ready. How many things happen exactly as you saw them or anticipating happen?
60%.
60%.
Yep.
Okay.
60%, because the other 40 is going to be what they do to attack you as a team.
Right.
But so they are who they are. A team is who they are. You know, if you're an inside zone run scheme, or you're a stretch zone team, you're going to do that, but there's going to be a wrinkle off of it. You might do it out of two tight end set instead of two backs, one tight end set. You're just going to, and a lot of that game planning has to do with what has hurt you as a team prior to playing them. You get hurt. We got hurt. Man, did the St. Louis Rams gash us out of two tight end sets. You're going to get a two tight end set with what Arizona does, because it's hurt you in the past, and they're going to do things the way they want to do them and then deviate off of them.
It's interesting. It really is a chess game, and a lot of it goes into what happens during the week. But good stuff right there, Matt. Appreciate the insight into the player development and how you prepare for an opponent and how you prepare to play the game and how much of an impact that makes on bringing guys along. We still have to get to the grades. We got rookie grades that we'll hand out at the very end of the show. And speaking of rookies, right now on the phone from the Browns Foundation event today, we are joined by Browns 12th overall pick, Danny Shelton, with us now. Danny, how are you? Danny, are you with us?
Danny.
Dino, we got him?
I just talked to the guys here just a second. I'll talk to them again here. Stand by, guys.
Should we take a quick break? There he is.
There we go.
Hey!
Danny Shelton, our guest right now on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Join us on the Ohio Business Machine sideline. Danny, how are you today? And tell us real quickly about the event that you're taking part in today for the Browns Foundation.
Hey, man, I'm doing good. I'm over here at Red Bull Babies and Children's Hospital. And basically, I'm here to hang out with some of the kids here, just have a good time, just experience a little bit more about the city.
How exciting is it to go in there, knowing that win, lose, or draw with what happened on Sunday, that's absolutely irrelevant, and that you guys and what you stand for as Cleveland Browns are some of these kids' heroes?
Yeah, I mean, that's something you have to have, everywhere you go. I mean, it's ingrained in us since we were little. I mean, to be that role model for younger people. And so just being here, seeing all these smiling faces, it makes everything, that much better. Win, lose, or draw, being around, happy people, kids who are looking up to you, that brings a warming heart to you.
Danny, let's talk about this game against St. Louis Rams. Mike Penn said the first half was as good a half of defensive football as you guys had played. What happened in the second half? What made you so successful in the first half, and then what kind of got off track in the second half?
We were just connecting as a defense. That first half we were out ready, just stoning the run, doing what we wanted to do, and then that second half just got out of hand. There's a lot of miscommunication, and then in order to beat the good teams, you gotta be consistent throughout the whole game, and we weren't able to do that, and we face another loss, and so we're just gonna have to continue to grow and continue to feed off what the film has said over the past couple of games. We do a great job in the first half, but we just gotta learn how to finish and continue to play like a Brown.
Danny, what's been the biggest learning lesson for you in your short professional career through seven games?
Just being a professional, not letting the outside noise get into what drives you and motivates you to play the game and to do your job. That's probably what was tough for me, transitioning, just hearing all the negative comments about the team and all of that. And trying to make a difference, and so buying into the system, and continuing to work with Coach Weaver, to work with Coach Jimmy O'Neill, to work with our veterans. I mean, we had some vets that really stepped up, and to see that 13-year player like Randy Starks, have one of his best games. I mean, it was awesome, and I just can't wait to
Danny, you were a guy who was playing, 80 snaps out there in the Pac-12. This week you played just over 20. Has that been a tough adjustment for you? And do you find it hard to kind of balance when your reps aren't every single play, doing your job on a particular play, but also wanting to make sure you flash and make an impact on those, what are limited snaps compared to what you're used to?
I mean, that's probably the number one thing that had me in the beginning of the season. College, being used to being on the field nonstop, that really got me. But just going and throughout the week working with these guys and understanding what the coaches' plans are, it helps me be a better player. I'm not used to being that on-call player. Just throwing in on the field and do things. I'm a guy who makes an impact on the field throughout the whole game. And so it was just a little bit of a change, and I'm finally starting to grow from that and finally starting to see myself improve, and I'm loving it.
One thing I'm curious about, it kind of in that locker, because I'm sure you guys are sick of hearing about it, the run defense, and when are you guys going to stop the run, et cetera. Is it getting to the point in the locker room where you guys are starting to get, you know, kind of angry with that story? And what can you guys do to really turn this thing around there?
Yeah, I mean, it's been the same thing. I mean, every week, you know, we're expecting the same thing that the fans are expecting, the dog pound is expecting. You know, we're expecting to win games. We're expecting to stop that run. And it obviously, you know, gets to a point where, you know, we get heated and get disappointed in each other. And, you know, we just have to continue to learn as a defense, to, you know, just continue to battle and grind. I mean, you know, our fans know exactly how it is. So, you know, that's the great part about it, is that, you know, the fans are hardworking fans, and so you know, for them to call us out and you know, make us realize what we're doing, you know, it also moves us and it helps us continue to grow. And so you know, our guys are ready and, you know, excited for this week.
Danny, certainly want to thank you for taking time out on your day off to help the Browns Foundation and the kids at the University Hospitals, and also for being with us here today. Good luck throughout your week of practice and, of course, on Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals.
All right, I appreciate it.
All right, Danny Shelton, the Browns' first-round pick this year, the first of two first-round picks, joining us here on CBD. When we come back, we're going to get Doug Deacon and Andrew Gribble for the roundtable. That's coming up. And then in hour number two, we'll get to the grades. We've got offensive grades. We've got defensive grades. We've got rookie grades. All that and much, much more in hour number two of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.